All right, guys, welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Men to Mastery podcast. This is episode 117 with Mark Silverman. Mark Silverman is an executive coach to CEOs and senior leadership teams. He helps them focus on making sure their organizations get the right work done at the right time. And in my opinion, perhaps even more importantly, he helps executives, he helps those professionals with personal and professional overwhelm, and helps make sure they can thrive and find fulfillment through their midlife and mid-career. So before I get into a few highlights of the episode with Mark, I want to offer two updates or two things. So one is around, as you know, I've been away from the podcast for a bit, working on the podcast itself, working on developing new business, new client, a coaching offering, as well as some better ways we can connect as a community and collaborate. So I'd like to offer you some detail around all that, but I will push it here to the end of the episode in the interest and respect for your time. So if you're interested in that, and I hope you are, please stay tuned after we cut away from the episode with Mark, or you can fast forward. This will probably be around minute mark 52 to 54. Somewhere in there, we'll get into that update. All right, and the second thing, and this relates directly to this episode, is it was just recently Memorial Day. We just recently had the June 6th D-Day holiday, and of course, July 4th, Independence Day is coming up. So Memorial Day, my family and I, we did Murph again, right? If you're familiar with that workout. So it's a bit of a moving memorial. It's our way of honoring, of suffering a bit, and trying to connect to those who have given so much, who have given everything in many cases, who have suffered much, much more for our freedoms. And moreover, beyond that that exercise, that moving memorial, we gave explicitly to, in particular, charities who are focused on the issue, the epidemic, if you will, of veteran suicide, military veterans, law enforcement, other first responders. And here's the thing, this issue that we just don't talk about enough, and we are certainly not dealing with effectively enough as a country and a culture and a society, goes beyond that, right? And it also hits very, very hard in the midlife male category for whatever reason. And I think some of those reasons relate exactly to what we're going to talk about today with Mark. So here's the segue, and here's some of the highlights with Mark Silverman. So Mark, before he was an executive coach, was a very, very highly successful salesperson in the technology space. So we're going to talk about that career arc. We're going to talk about kind of the fuel behind your career and why what worked in your 20s, 30s, maybe even 40s may not be sustainable into your 50s, 60s, sort of that midlife career stage and beyond. And we talk about why men have this tendency in mid-career, midlife, to just blow things up, right? Kind of go nuclear with change rather than make incremental ratcheting style changes, again, that they may have in a fashion earlier in their life and in their career. So around all that, we're going to talk about stress and anxiety, how it affects your job performance, how it affects your life, and how to master some of that overwhelm. Lastly, we'll talk about where coaching fits in as a role to all this. This really permeates the episode because it's what Mark is so good at and specializes in. But in particular, how coaching is often something that CEOs in particular and other senior leaders in executive roles are missing. And here are the two main areas that I find that it is missing, and we talk about with Mark today, is oftentimes you reach a level of success and seniority, hierarchical leadership, positional leadership, where the impartiality of opinion and advice starts to be missing, right? You end up with the yes men. And in that, you're missing somebody to really call you out on your bullshit and somebody to observe the things you can't see yourselves, right? The classic shadows or blind spots. And we have, all of us, too many of both of those things, right? The areas where we're BSing ourselves, and where you literally look in the mirror and see things with your mind differently than perhaps reality is, or that others might observe. So we're going to get into all that today with Mark Silverman, and we'll jump right in here now. But again, come back after we cut away from the episode with Mark. I'll let you know where to find the show notes for this episode, some freebies where you can dive deeper with Mark Silverman, and then, of course, the updates I promised you on what's going on here with the Men to Mastery community. All right, with that, let's get into it with executive coach Mark Silverman. Mark Silverman, welcome. I'm very excited for this conversation today. Mark Silverman is an executive coach, an author, also a podcast host. He is a speaker and he works with CEOs around the world, helping turn their fast rising high achievers into effective leaders, a topic I really love and is near and dear to my heart. I think we all know if we're somewhere on this path that success, effective leadership, effective business starts with leading ourselves and starting with the inner work first. So we know that adversity is a gift. It is really the path to success. And Mark is no stranger to adversity. At 27 years old, he was living out of his car, homeless, down to 135 pounds. And by what, 5 or 6 years later, at the age of 33, he was a millionaire. So we've got the hero journey. We've always got the character arc.
Excuse me. On his tape sets, he'd always say, I was living in a one-room basement apartment and, you know, and I went and I studied success and did all those things. And, you know, whenever I'm on stage, I'm always asked to tell that story of being homeless and, you know, how did that all happen? And I get really bored with it, but I forget that it's actually, it gives inspiration to people that no matter where you are on the journey, it can change. It can be something different. And I had two of those journeys. So yeah, so I was a drunk and I was an alcoholic, a drug addict, a sex addict. And yeah, I was a mess at 27 years old. And it all finally kind of came to a head where I had no place to live. I had no food. I had no money left. And I was living in my little red Toyota pickup truck. And I came to Washington, D.C. to borrow some money from my brother. I was on the West Coast at that time. So I drove across the country and he put me in AA and Narcotics Anonymous. And he said, you're going to go to the gym. And by the way, when I was 130, I was actually 130 pounds. I thought I was fat. I always thought I was fat my whole entire life. And I see pictures now from the week that I drove into D.C. And I'm like, holy mackerel, like, dysmorphia is a thing. So what happened was I enrolled in college. These were like the stipulations for me to crash on his couch, right? And I did those things. And it was really interesting to do things sober, right? To find out that I actually had an aptitude for learning. You know, going back to school in your 30s is a very different thing because you're kind of choosing to be there. So my journey there was different. Then, you know, I waited on tables and everything. I finally got my first professional job as a sales guy because I had no skills. I was shy. I was introverted. I don't like to bother people. And I got a sales job where I had to call 60 people a day. Otherwise, I didn't get paid. Right. So like for me, that was freaking hell. But somehow, because I'm interested in other people, and they say I've learned since, you know, becoming a successful sales guy, that introverts make really good salespeople. Because we're interested in other people. How do we help you get where you want to go? My being an empath actually was helpful. I didn't look like the other sales guys who were, you know, out partying, bringing people to strip joints and doing all that stuff. But clients, you know, customers trusted me. So I went from that job to another job and I doubled my income. Then I went to another job and doubled my income. And then someone said, you know, you should come work for this big company and really learn how to do sales. So I was like, okay, I had no plan, right? You know, I had never made more than 20 something thousand dollars a year, you know, so now I'm in the high tech industry in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, and I'm going from the startup to startup. And if you look at my resume is the who's who of the fastest growing companies in Silicon Valley history. And again, who I was, you never would have thought that. Here's the interesting thing. I got married. I had kids. I got a convertible. I bought $1 million house. I did all those things, right? But inside, I'm still this homeless guy, right? And I think you talk about shadow work, you know, and doing that internal beliefs work on yourself. So even though on the outside, I'm living in Elysium, right? I'm living in, in status symbol land, and I'm the committee chair for the Boy Scouts, and I'm the third grade basketball coach, right? And I'm all things to all people. Inside, it's just not jiving. And so stone cold sober in 2008, my marriage falls apart. And like, again, this is the hard for me thing for me to comprehend. Like I didn't drink, so I wouldn't screw things up. And stone cold sober, my marriage falls apart. My ex-wife and I were fighting and fighting and fighting, couldn't get along. I couldn't sell anything. My whatever was wrong with me internally, I could not sell a thing. And I'm working for one of the best technology companies on the planet. And I was having panic attacks every day. Like I would walk in the hall and meet an executive that I normally would work with, and I'd have to run in the bathroom because I couldn't breathe. Hmm. Or I'd be doing a presentation in a meeting and I'd start to sweat. I'm like, what is going on with me? My immune system just started going crazy and I started losing weight again and I got really sick and they told me I was probably gonna die. I was misdiagnosed, thank God, but I thought I was gonna die. So I made this decision at 48 years old that if I was gonna die, I needed to leave $1 million for my ex-wife and my kids. I just need to go make $1 million this year and somehow do that. So I like it. So here's the singularity of goals, right? My book is only tens, right? Like what is the most essential thing that you can commit yourself to? So I was committed to leaving an extra $1 million for my ex-wife and my kids. I heard when I was in the parking lot of one of the doctors, this guy on the radio, Stu Middleman, who is an ultra marathoner, he says, everybody can run. It is our birthright as humans, as bipedal people, that we can run. So I called him and I said, I need to run the Marine Corps Marathon. I want to show my kids what I did with adversity. When I die, I want them to see that their dad, one of his last things was he ran the Marine Corps Marathon. He says, yeah, it takes about 2 years because I couldn't run a mile. He says, no, I need to run it in 8 months. I need to run it in October. He goes, yeah, I'm not so sure. But anyway, he said, he took me on and, you know, we did phone calls and he had me training. And then I decided I wanted to give $60,000 to charity. Because I just felt so bad about myself for screwing up my life, my marriage, my kids, everything. So I had these three goals in that year. I got a new job, like out of the blue, someone called me and said, hey, come work with this startup. So I went to work there. And that it took about a year and a quarter to make $1 million. I made $1 million. I gave the $60,000 charity and I ran the Marine Corps Marathon an hour faster than my coach even thought I could do. So what happens? I'm healthier than I've ever been. My career's taking off, my kids and my ex-wife are good. And I'm sitting here with it, you know, with another run-in with the Phoenix kind of thing, you know, in the ashes and rising. And I realized then that I can create my life. It wasn't as articulate. Now I'm an executive coach. So I have the fancy language to talk about how we create our lives, how we make choices and incremental, you know, improvements and all that. But while I was training for the marathon, I listened to every self-help book ever written. I listened to every spiritual book, you know, everything I could get my hands on while I was running, because I wanted to build a new mark. I wanted to build a new person. I didn't want to be the person I was before. And I never knew that you didn't have to be who you were. I don't have to be tomorrow who I am today. I can change. You know, my personality is fluid. It's a made up thing anyway. So that was the start of my trajectory towards becoming an executive coach and wanting to help other people understand they're free. So that's my you know, short Jewish Tony Robbins story of how I came to, you know, just dedicating my life to other people, not having to crash and burn that way to find out that they can reinvent themselves.
Yeah, Tony always talks about either inspiration or desperation. So I suppose if you can help people with the inspiration approach to next level versus the crash and burn approach, some of us learn the hard way. It does seem like, I was just having this conversation recently and we had a guest on who studied, you know, sort of the type A personality, the people that are really wired a certain way. It's all in on everything, right? Maybe it's all in on the addictions you mentioned early on, or it's all in, can be all in on health, can be all in on religion.
You know, I'm going through your podcast. I'm looking at all the topics that you covered, yeah. And I could see myself 15 years ago saying, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do that. And I'm going to be that guy. And I'm going to meditate, but I'm also going to do a triathlon and I'm going to do that. And you know, that same thing is right. Like you can't sit with yourself. So you go do, you know, create this monster of a human and you think you're David Goggins, but meanwhile, you still can't sit in a room all by yourself and be
right. Right. Yeah. And in some ways, I think that like chasing the next shiny object may be beneficial. It may have assets, it may have benefits, but at the same time, it's probably just distracting from what we really need to do. And that might be something that's pretty simple. Simple, but not easy is a phrase I come across a lot, right? Just sitting with yourself, quiet, starting to maybe become aware of thoughts and start to in that. So this is, you know, part of the process I've gone through. You're talking about effectively the stories that we tell ourselves, sort of what we've programmed or been programmed with, and the awareness to start to question those, and the freedom, the power to modify them and recreate ourselves, recreate our stories, make empowering stories. We've all got, you know, you said you love to tell the story, and maybe it's old to you, but it's new to somebody else. We've all got our traumas and dramas, right? So it helps us connect and be relatable to each other. And we've all got to somehow deal with that stuff to get better at who we are now, to become and be conscious about what we want to become next.
If we can only get people to believe you that we all have our dramas and traumas, right? So you meet people and you compare your outsides to their insides, that old saying, right? But the truth is, everybody I get to know and have a deep conversation with has some kind of a story like mine. It's, you know, the characters are different, the circumstances are different, but they've had to endure or deal with something. There's very few people who've had that idyllic upbringing in childhood. And that has its own problems when you come into the real world.
Yeah, 100%, right? We're talking about sort of adversity, you know, forging the diamonds under pressure type of thing, or whatever analogy you want to use. And yeah, the other extreme is like, if life's too easy, if you went through our podcast list, Michael Easter wrote The Comfort Crisis, right? So there's this crisis at the other end of the spectrum. I got to think, you know, for someone like yourself who works pretty primarily with top achievers, top sales guys, maybe CEOs, a lot of those folks are wired the way that we are, the way that we're talking about.
Yes.
So have these same challenges, have the same traumas and dramas. Yeah. So maybe, I guess, let me ask this as a starting place, because I know part of your specialty is helping that C-suite, or helping those achievers become also good leaders, not just individual mm-hmm. performers, but excellent leaders. What's sort of the what's your path in? Where do you start with these guys? And here's the reason I'm fascinated by this is I run into a lot of CEOs that sort of have this egoic, you know, hey, I made it. I'm successful. I know what I'm doing. I don't need a coach. I don't need help. I've already got a formula that works. Obviously, you know, look at me and look at my company. So maybe sort of tone deaf to the holistic health and holistic balance and achievement we're talking about for themselves. May not even believe they need help or work on themselves. And then, you know, casting that out to their team. So how do you sort of break through that? Or what's a typical first conversation look like as a coach for a CEO?
It's funny. I was just talking to one of my CEOs who's been with me for 4 years, and we were talking about doing another year together. And one of the problems, and I said, one of the problems with us working together is you're too rich, your girlfriend's too pretty, and, you know, like, you just don't need to do anything, right? Like there's no urgency for any of this stuff. So we have to find something for you to be passionate about. But he said, I do remember, so we talked about, you know, what does he have now? Because I always do a review, you know, after 6 months or a year with someone and find out. And he says, well, I have my integrity back. He says, the reason I hired you was in that first conversation, you told me that I had no integrity. And I was furious at you, because I am so honest and I'm so careful with my word and my integrity. And you said, but you're cheating on your wife. So you have no integrity. Like, there's no integrity anywhere. If you're cheating on your wife, you have no integrity. And he said, that's why he hired me, because he wanted his integrity back more than anything. You know, his marriage was over. Like, but, you know, so all of the justifications were there, but it, you know, like, he wasn't his word. And it took him a long time to become an honest person. So now he's in this wonderful new relationship where he's an honest man in that relationship, speaks his mind, speaks his truth. So usually my way in, my career's changed a little. It used to be CEOs who were cracking at the seams. So my podcast was Mastering Midlife. I was the midlife crisis guy, right? But then I turned 60 and I decided I'm a little too old for midlife, and I'll leave it to you guys. You know, now I'm the geriatric mastery guy. But so it's usually the cracks were showing for them, and someone would call me and say, he really needs to talk to Mark. So because you have to have the cracks, otherwise you won't listen. Right? Something has to stop working.
So just a quick question on that, Mark. So when you say the guys busting the seams or the cracks, was that more maybe they were successful with business, but the rest of their life was falling apart? Or was that more about, hey, I've reached this level of what I call success, but I'm unhappy, I'm miserable, I have no fulfillment, purpose.
Yeah, I'm bored, or I'm starting to see my temper show up, and you know, because they're bored, their temper shows up, or it could be any myriad of things. The premise of Mastering Midlife was, you know, the drives and motivations that get you through your 20s and 30s start to turn on you in your 40s and 50s, right? So how many of us have become successful? Like, I became successful because I never wanted anybody to see that homeless guy again. Right. So I covered it up with Hugo Boss suits and a gold watch and a sports car. Right. But that guy was still there. So what happens in your 40s and 50s, if you don't listen to that internal clock, you know, saying something needs to change, something needs to shift, you start to drift away in your relationships. You start to drift away from who you are, and the midlife crisis, the job crisis, the health crisis, the relationship crisis just blows up in your face. You know, women tend to go into like adrenal fatigue and go down. Men tend to blow shit up, right? Like I don't like this. I don't know how to incrementally change anything because I can't have a deep, honest conversation with my wife. So we blow shit up and then figure out what to do with the pieces, right? So my career has really shifted now because these CEOs have been calling me and saying, I got so-and-so, and I hate to always be on the masculine in this, but most of my clients are men. You know, I got so-and-so, rock star. No manners. You're bull in a china closet. Can you teach him some manners? Right. Or I got another rock star who won't, like, he's now in the C-suite. He's part of my senior leadership team. Right. But he won't get his hands off the reins of the day to day. Right. He won't set vision. Right. So I get called when there's someone who's been young, talented, and rising really fast gets put on the leadership team and needs to be matured and needs to learn those skills. I just had dinner with two clients who I've had for 4 years. I guess they're 4 years now. When I first met them, I wasn't as successful as I am now. So I needed every check I got, right? I was still taking care of an ex-wife, two kids, elderly parents, all this stuff. And I left my lucrative career to be a air quotes coach. So I'm really, you know, cognizant that I need the check. So I fly, I do international. So I fly to their country. This is way before COVID, and I'm meeting with them. And this is a done deal. The CEO has already decided this is just a chemistry meeting. They're going to give me my fat check. So they come in to talk to me, and I can't believe, you know, this comes out of my mouth because I'm a sales guy. Don't ever talk yourself out of the sale. And I said to each one of them, I said, I'm glad you said, yes, you want to work with me. Now I have a couple of things to ask you. I said, you're going to be successful with or without me. And by the way, I wear a solid gold $35,000 watch. I don't care about your success. What I care about are you going to be the kind of fathers your sons need? Are you going to be the kind of husbands your wives need? And are you going to be the kind of men who can deal with this kind of wealth in the world? If you're up to working on those things, then I will take you on as a client. And inside I'm going, what are you saying, Silverman? Like you need that check. And their eyes both got really big. And they were like, we're totally in. We want this. And I just had dinner with them and their wives, and I had never met their wives. And their wives started telling me at dinner, and I may cry here. My wife says, you know, we're so thankful that they met you. You know, what you did for the pressure that they're under, what you've done for them as men, what you've done for them as husbands, what you've done for our relationship and your coaching is amazing. And I'm bawling my eyes out in this restaurant. That's why I do what I do. Right. So I get hired for the success of the leadership for that, because again, you can't be happy in a leadership position if you don't actually know how to do leadership. Right. There's very few born leaders. It's a learned skill. You know, that's the good news. You can learn it. Right. But, you know, if you can't find, and I notice, you know, on your mastery program, you know, you have these pillars. Are you looking at every area of your life and making sure that you're holistically successful? So that's what I'm working with.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm curious. So I think part of the way I digest what you just shared is we have these sort of outer metrics, or we can point to the business successes, but the really important stuff is what you got the feedback on at dinner, right? That's the richness in life. When you've got, let's say, a CEO, and then you've got some younger up and coming achievers, and you're working with each of these individuals and a team, and you're trying to grow these folks into better leaders or leaders, period. Some of what I if I took this the right way, those conversations you've had initially with, hey, are we going to work together, for the first time, or maybe the first time in a long time, you're providing some ugly but very honest feedback to folks.
Almost always, you're
holding that mirror up. And then if we extend that to a leadership team, having some similar level of honesty with each other, of the feedback that we really need. Do you run into cultural barriers to that? Meaning my journey through the corporate world and the, you know, at large world here, right? We've sort of gotten soft. We've gotten soft and wanting to be nice to each other, or what we think is nice to each other, but we're really doing each other a disservice by just sort of frosting over all that stuff. And I see some of that show up in the working world, right? Where accountability isn't really a thing. Ownership isn't really a thing. Constructive feedback isn't as much of a thing. Do you see that? Do you run into it? How do you overcome that with a leadership team and get them working more in that spirit?
It's kind of the reason why I have a job and a waiting list to work with me, because most people don't want to have those. That's the hardest thing for people to do. And most people want to get along. You know, there are the bull in the china closet who will just say what they think and all that stuff and kind of ruin things. But most people want to be liked. Most people want to be seen as a team player. And by that, they mean don't criticize, don't mm-hmm. push back. So, you know, and for me, what I find with leaders is the number one trouble they have is having that feedback accountability loop going. So you brought me a piece of work, right? Because this is the classic, I just did it myself. I worked till 2 o'clock in the morning because it was easier for me to do it than teach them to do it. Most people don't want to say, okay, you brought me this piece of work, or you did something this way. What I loved about this was great. You know, this was great. What would be better is, or the gap to what the piece of work I need is this. Do you agree with me? You know, can we come to agreement that this is the level of work we need back? Send them away, have them come back, and then say, great, you're closer. Right? Still, here's the gap. Like, and have that feedback accountability loop going all the time. It's so hard. It takes so much work. It takes so much psychic energy to do it. But what happens is you're starting to create other leaders in your organization, right? A month, two months down the line, that person is going to be so much more autonomous. They're going to think for themselves. They're going to understand what the assignment is. So now you're going to be able to turn your back. Once you assign that plate, you're going to be able to turn your back and know that that's good. But that's the hardest thing, I think, for almost everybody to do.
That makes sense. I'm kind of playing that forward. So thinking about, you know, maybe one of these CEOs or business owners that you've worked with for a number of years. So, you know, if one leader is building additional leaders and they're building the next generation of leaders, have you gone through sort of a full cycle with one of your guys to where they've exited, right, and stepped away?
None have exited yet, but they're dealing with the, so what do I actually do with the organization now? Like, what's my job? Just had that conversation this morning. It's like, so I've got this person handling this. This is going well. What's my job? And so now we get to actually build something new for them, right? He's got a foundation. He's got, you know, that he works with and all that. He sets visions and strategy. And, you know, he wants to take the company to a certain level. The people he's got in place, he built the company, right? This is what I notice with most CEOs. One of the best things I do for the leadership team is I put them in their place and I'm like, you're not the CEO, right? They'll complain. They think they can run the company better, all this stuff. You're not the CEO. You're not paid to be the CEO, right? So let's you know, right size our commitment right now. You don't know what the senior level challenges that person has to deal with. The CEO is usually the person who will take the rocket ship from 0 to 60,
mm-hmm, right?
The people on the leadership team, there's very few people on the leadership team who will be the person who takes it from 0 to 60, let alone from 60 to 100. Right. So understanding that is really, really important. Now you can get people, and hopefully if you're a healthy CEO, you get people to take care of all those other things, but you're still the spice in the sauce that is driving the company to where it's going to go. I talked to one CEO, I coached his leadership team. I didn't coach him, but when I was doing some rounds with his people, he comes in at the conference room and sits down with me and he goes, "Oh, Silverman, when is it time to leave? When is it time to just give up?" And I said, "Dude, I'm not your coach. you have the best coach on the planet. It happened to be a friend of mine. I said, I'm not your coach, so I can't tell you that. But, you know, he says, you know, what my problem is when I turn my back, everything slows down. And I said, yeah, part of that is your perception, you know, because, you know, you're such a driver, part of that is your perception. And part of it's true. And I said, you know, these two guys on your leadership team could be CEO. They're definitely mature enough. They're ready to be CEO. I said, the problem for you would be is they're not going to run the company that you would run. You're the rocket fuel in this company. They'll run a successful company. They'll run a wonderful company, but it'll be different than what you're doing. Right. So that's the hard thing for those CEOs who want to leave. Like, can I give my baby to somebody else and watch them turn it into something different?
Right.
You know, I put it in a Red Sox uniform and they want to put it in a Yankees uniform. Not sure I'm good with that, you know, that kind of thing.
How often do you get fired?
I got violently attacked once. How often do I get fired? I have 100% retention rate, renewal rate. So
that's pretty good.
I fire people all the time. Like I'll tell people, you know what? You and I have been together for 2 years. I've done as much as I can for you. I need you to go join a mastermind with people who are 10 times more successful than you. I want you to steep yourself in. So I fire. I fire everybody. I
push them out of the nest. Yet. Yeah.
I've completed with people.
Okay.
Where it's just, you know, we've run the course. And it's been good, but yeah, no, I haven't been fired yet, except for that one person who attacked me.
No, I was just interested if somebody had sort of run you out the door, wasn't ready, you know, said yes, wasn't ready, ran you out the door and then brought you back.
A couple people have ended and then come back. Yes, that's happened. But no, yeah. And I haven't gotten fired yet. Maybe I'm not confrontational enough.
Yeah. Maybe you got to push the envelope a little bit more.
Goals, man. We got goals.
Goals. What else did I want to ask about that? What's your process like, or your tools, or how do you develop these leaders?
I didn't know what it was until recently. You know, if you asked me that 6 months or a year ago, I would have said, you know, I don't know. It's kind of Mark's magic. Like, I don't know. And a friend of mine and I sat in my office and we actually codified what it is I do. And that's how I created the Rising Leader Handbook and the Rising Leader Workshop that I'm building now. Is I take time. So it's separated into leading up. So, you know, leading your CEO or leading your senior leader. How do you do that? Then it's leading across. How are you a leader? You know, I'm sure you've done all these leadership trainings where you're a team of alpha men. And you got to pick a leader and then, but you got to be a follower, but you also got to lead. And, you know, like those kinds of things, like, how do you lead in a group of people who also want to lead, want to be seen, want their agenda, but also collaborate while you're competing for attention, all that stuff. So that leading in the peer group, and that's the culture thing that you were talking about.
Yeah,
right. How do you create that? So that once you get those two things, right, now, how do you lead your team and how do you do that? And then the most important thing is how do you lead yourself?
Yep.
Usually I do it in two ways. First, I'm usually brought in again for, you know, teach the person some manners. So I kind of get them in line, like, you're not the CEO, right? You like your job, right? Because if you don't like your job, quit. Okay, you like your job. Now we're gonna smile and we're gonna do what we signed up to do because you make a lot of freaking money. And then we work on the internal. So the first 6 months is always internal leadership. You're a choice. You are not a victim of circumstance. Right. You get to speak your mind. How do you speak your mind? How do you ask for what you want? How do you take care of yourself? One of my guys was a former professional athlete, and now he's an executive in a company. He's 6'4", you know, kind of eats furniture for dinner. Big, big guy. Always laughs how I'm not intimidating because I'm 5'7", except he says he listens to me. That's why he signed up again. But anyway, so I was hired because he has anger issues. Like, he's scaring everybody on the team. He's 6'4", right? Athlete. He's in his 40s. And I said, okay, here's the problem. I said, I'm not going to coach you again until, you know, I asked him, you know, when was the last time you were in the gym? And his wife's a marathoner. And when he says, I haven't been in the gym in probably 2 years, 3 years. I said, great. You're overweight. You're breathing heavy. You know, I am not going to coach you again until you've been to the gym 8 times. And I want you to take a picture of yourself in the gym, not because I need the accountability, but because I want to make this fun. And I want you to take, I want, you know, like, take a picture of yourself in the gym 8 times and we will coach again. He goes, you know, so he comes after 8 times, he comes back. He says, why did you do that? I said, because I can't play whack-a-mole with your emotions. Like, you're a 5-year-old ADHD kid who needs to be on the playground before he can sit at the desk. Right. So, you know, why would I try and do that when you have all this pent up energy? So it's 4 months later, it's time for renewal. He looks amazing. He dropped all this weight, you know, like, just looks great. I'm on with the CEO and the CEO says, you're going to do another 6 months with him. Right. And he goes, by the way, he looks awesome. What'd you do to him? Right. So that's nice. The kind of thing that, you know, sometimes coaching is just that. It's like, you know, if you're an athlete and you don't play sports, you're in trouble.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot to that. What about, and this may be an aspect of what you just mentioned as well, right? Curious about sort of the dark side or the shadow side or the downside of quote unquote success, do the air quotes thing again, meaning, you know, maybe that CEO who is in that place of, well, I could step away or what's next, going back to adversity, right? And we sort of thrive as human animals in challenge. How does that look? How do you start to create the next challenge or adversity or what the next thing is that someone is going to work on rather than self-destructing again?
The scariest thing on the planet is not public speaking. It's the blank page. It's the blank canvas. It's that pause. You know, getting someone to sit down and just slow down enough. Company's working great. Everything's doing good. Can you take time and go for walks? Can you journal? What are you interested in? You know, so, you know, what are you pissed off about the world? You know, what pisses you off in the world, right? I can't stand the fact that dolphins are being slaughtered. Great. Do you care enough to do something about that? No, great. Let's look at something else. Like, you know, do you want to start another? Some people don't want to do that. They just want to start another business. Some people want to travel. Some people want to do all kinds of stuff. And then that incremental thing is the hard thing, right? Because we're men, right? We're either all in or I quit. Right?
Right.
I love her and I'm devoted, or I have to get divorced. You know, so for me, like, can you have a conversation before you walk out the door? Can you have a conversation with her about some of the things that you don't like in your relationship? And maybe you can work those things out. That's so much harder than being a doormat or walking out the door, right? Same thing right. With the company. Okay. The companies, can you work 2 days a week and actually find some hobbies? Or, you know, anything. And that's the hardest thing is like, no, I'm needed. We've just established you're not needed at all. So can you spend two days a week? And it's really hard because there's so much identity with it, and ego and fear. And, you know, if we can teach leadership skills again all day long, but if we don't work on these underlying things, I was just speaking in front of a group of CEOs yesterday. And I was talking about childhood traumas. And when I walked in to speak, someone else was talking about it. So it was a great segue about childhood traumas. I said, so you guys all think that you're in relationship with each other. So when someone's yelling at you or something's happening, you think that that's what's going on. They're yelling at something from childhood. You're not even in the room, right? Right. Those things, those shadows are with us in every relationship, everything that we do, everything that we go. We're not in relationship with the world. We're in relationship with what we think about the world, the people we're in, and all that stuff. So if you're teaching leadership, if you don't get people to drop down and learn who they are, what their fears are, what drives them, it's again, just playing whack-a-mole with behaviors.
Yeah, it really is. Fear is a great one. I know it certainly is. It's a hardwired survival mechanism, right? It's the reason that we're here, and it can be, and it certainly is a fuel for most of us. You know, those things from our childhood. I'm never going to live in the car again, or my house got repossessed, or whatever it was, right? It drives us to this success, or what we define as success, and sometimes to the point of overachieving, right? But then,
How many overachievers do you know, like real successful overachievers, that you don't see the underlying pain that drove them to that level of success?
100%. It's there. Probably easier for somebody to see it from the outside than for them to see it themselves a lot of times, right?
Totally.
Right. And then maybe that pivot from what's driven us, using that fear, what's driven us in some good and some unhealthy ways, and pivoting to more courage-based decisions. That's scary in itself.
Sure. Here's the little secret though. All those things that you learned are not bad, right? The thing that almost destroyed me was I'm an empath. You know, I have ADHD. I have, you know, all these things that we didn't know that kind of drove me into the ground. Once I got healthy, those things become my superpowers.
Right, right.
So a healthy driver becomes an inspirational leader. An unhealthy driver is something different, right? So those talents and gifts that you got don't go away. They're just now, they're cleaner, they're healthier, and they're more effective.
100%. Let me ask about the other end of the spectrum from sort of, I don't have enough to do, and now I've got to figure out what the next challenge is or what the next chapter is. What about overwhelm? I know that's something you talk about a lot. How does that show up in leaders, and how do you start to address it or treat it?
So basically, you know, I asked the question, where do you think overwhelm lives? Like, where does overwhelm live for you?
I see it in myself and others. You mentioned addictions earlier. Work itself can be an addiction, right? And busyness as business. So overwhelm meaning just too much dedication to sort of one domain, one vertical, and a complete lack of focus in other areas. That's how overwhelm shows up.
So it sounds to me like you get overwhelmed when you feel like you're neglecting parts of your life.
Yeah, it's a good question. I tend to recognize it, I think, in terms of being out of balance, whether that's from a time perspective or whether it's just being present when I do have the time. I'm not one who is very good at thinking about, yes, I shouldn't use the word thinking, feeling. You ask about feelings, right? The feeling part of it. That's a challenge for me personally.
Sure. So like this whole mastery, right? For you, did that come from the fact that you realized that you weren't mastering all these different parts of your life? So you decided build this
absolutely.
And teach what you need to learn.
Absolutely.
So my book, Only Tens, Confront Your To-Do List, Transform Your Life, came from the fact that I have ADHD and I can't pay attention to anything. And I'm running my own company. Right. So how do I actually get things done? So I was teaching what I needed to learn. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So for me, overwhelm is what happens between my ears. So again, your to-do list is not what overwhelms you. It's what you think about your to-do list that overwhelms you. It's the lies that you tell people all day, every day, and the lies that you tell yourself. When you look at your to-do list, what's on your to-do list that doesn't belong there? What's on your to-do list that you didn't set a boundary? What's on your to-do list that you didn't eat? What's on your to-do list that you just don't want to do, but you think you should do it? So it's on your to-do list from yesterday, the day before, sure. And you're never going to get to it. And you're just lying. So I can get someone back 8 hours in their week in 15 minutes by looking at their to-do list, just by confronting the bullshit on their to-do list, right? And the self-esteem that goes with those things, you know, on the to-do list. So for me, it's the difficult conversations that you need to have, which are, you know, setting boundaries, asking for help, getting clarification, saying no, a complete sentence, you know, getting really strong agreements with people, and then having a feedback loop. You know, all those conversations are the things that are going to get you out of overwhelm. And it's something that you need to practice every day. Because my guess is anybody who's listening here, I can't keep anybody out of overwhelm. You know, I'm Zen Master Flash and I get overwhelmed. I can get people out of overwhelm because, you know, they're going to wake up and their kids are going to spill the cereal. They're going to be late for work and their email is going to be full. You're going to be overwhelmed. Now, how do you breathe? How do you ground yourself? How do you stop scaring yourself about the fact that you're going to be late for work and what does that mean and all that stuff? And, you know, deal with all the bullshit in your mind that you're making up that's scaring you. And then how do you get centered into reality? And by the way, for this overwhelm thing, what I'll do is I'm setting up a page for your people. And they can download a free copy of my book, Only 10, on the page.
Oh, it's very kind. Appreciate that, Mark. Thank you.
It'll be marksilverman.com/ the name of your podcast.
Yeah, or we'll just do /mastery, maybe something like that, unless that's already taken. Yeah, thank you. We'll work on that offline.
I know you're the Men of Mastery podcast. I keep thinking, because my podcast was Mastering Midlife. Right. I keep trying to send people to my old podcast when I think of the name of your podcast. But it's going to be Men of Mastery.
Okay. All right. No, I appreciate that. We'll get links up to it with the show notes for this one. Yeah, no, you're completely right. Like I just... what was going on in my head as you were describing that, I can certainly relate to. I'm in the middle and have been in the middle of redoing this home office, home studio for quite a while, right? And so something will happen as we go into the weekend here. My son, we were talking about offline, we'll have lots of busy stuff we got to run around to and get to run around to. And my wife will come up with social stuff. I'm certainly the introvert. And in my mind, what's going on will be like, oh, you know, we got to finish taping the edges so we can paint, and then we got the furniture coming, and then this and then that, right? And that's all getting delayed by all this other stuff. But the reality is nobody else is having that conversation. Nobody else is feeling that way. It's only going on between my ears. And, you know, what's one more day or one more hour when I've been sitting on this for 2 months?
Right. And we put it on the back burner. The last thing I do in my Mastering Overwhelm workshop is I send everybody out for a break, change the energy. I bring them back and I say, okay, great. What's not on the list that should be on the list? Right. What have you been wanting to do, putting off doing? You know, and it's almost always, I haven't spent enough time in my marriage, or I haven't been with my kids, or I really want to work out or something like that. And then they say, okay, so I make them commit to what they're going to do. And they'll say, I'm going to work out more. And I'm like, you can't work out more. What do you mean? You can't work out more. You can only plan to go to the gym. When are you going to go to the gym next? Or are you going to call a trainer? Those are the things you can do. You can't work out more. I'm going to spend more time with your wife, my wife. No, you can't spend more time with your wife. When are you going to set date night? Right. Yeah. And we do that beforehand, because we forget. Again, the time between 50 and 60, you know, is so much faster than I would have ever thought possible. I keep this thing 4,000 weeks on my wall, where you check off a week in your life every day, every week. And I'm watching that because, you know, I got what, a good 10 years to create what I want to create. And that's all of us. Like, it's now. Life is now. So go have your date with your significant other. Create, you know, if you want your office, get your office.
Yeah. And those are sort of the peak earning years, right? We're starting to realize the fruition of the things we've built. And yeah, it just becomes more and more of all the same challenges in a pressure cooker. Well, so thank you for mentioning the link, and we'll get that out. You mentioned the workshop. So just before we run out of time, take me through more of how you engage with people, the workshop, your new book coming out, for anybody that this really resonates with, you know, how they might consider working with Mark.
Great. So the workshop, the Mastering Overwhelm workshop, is something I do for leadership teams. Okay. and CEO roundtables and things like that, is where I just take people in a morning or an afternoon through their world, their inner and outer world, and help them get out of overwhelm and deal with the things in their lives. The Rising Leader workshop is being built now. So we're on module 2 of 12. It's going to be a 12 module training, you know, again, leading up, leading across, leading your team, and then leading yourself. And we're going to do practical and really, you know, thick tasks in order by the end of that 12 weeks for you to be a rock star corporate citizen who is, you know, kind of making their own way in the organization. So that'll be coming probably in about a month and a half. So okay. We'll do that.
That's a 12 week or 12?
It's a 12 module course. And we're now just trying to decide, do we do it 12 weeks in a row? Because I've talked to my clients about it, and they're like, Mark, it's taken me 3 years to assimilate everything that you've taught me. Right. How can I do it in 12 weeks? So we're trying to decide, but most people won't learn. So I think what we're going to do is do a 12-week course and then put them into a pool of people so that there's a community and go that way. So I'm still formulating that. Should have a product ready to go when I'm on a great podcast like this, but you know, we're building it. So go to markjsilverman.com and you can watch that and see when that shows up.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's crazy how we have so many tools that we tend to apply in the business world, you know, like this overwhelm concept of, you know, if it were a business overwhelm, we'd probably just sit down and we'd come up with some kind of a weighting, and we'd prioritize and urgency and importance and all that kind of stuff. And then we'd figure it out. Right. And we'd rank it and we'd attack it, but we don't do that ourselves in our personal life so much.
No, not especially as men, we're not taught that. Also on the, you know, on the page, it's interesting. Most of my clients have ADD too, even if it's undiagnosed, and they won't read my book. They're like, Mark, can you make a little 5-minute video of that concept? So on that page where you can download my book for your listeners, there's all those videos that I make for my clients are on there with worksheets. Nice. For them. So they can actually do the Mastering Overwhelm workshop all by themselves in front of their computer.
Nice. Okay. Fantastic. That sounds really beneficial. Just one last question that sort of popped up for me. You mentioned asking for help earlier, and that's something I can relate to as one of the hardest things for myself, for men, I think a lot of men. Do you see that, or what's kind of the hardest thing that you see men on this journey being able to do or learn?
Asking for help is almost impossible. Almost impossible. I was talking to one executive who has dyslexia, put himself through law school, was an executive in a multinational corporation, and was in tears a lot of nights in the middle of the night. And he confided in me. He says, you know, Mark, you've known me all this time, because he's an executive that I knew. He says, but it takes me three times as much work to do what everybody else does. Not, I was shocked, because I'm like, this guy's a freaking stud, right? I said, wow, have you shared that with your wife? And I know his wife's amazing. He says, no, I don't want to burden her. Really? She doesn't know that you're having panic attacks in the middle of the night because of how hard this is for you? He says, I would never burden her with that. I said, okay, as with every conversation, you can say yes, no, or renegotiate, but I would love for you to go have a conversation with your wife and let her know about this stress, because I want you to have a teammate. I happen to know your wife, and I know that she can handle this and it's not a burden to her. And he went and talked to her, and she was like, I got you, babe. You know, like I love you, right? That's the hardest thing for men to do, right? And it's hard because sometimes, you know, their wives aren't safe, right? If they show vulnerability, their wives get scared. It's not that they're bad, you know, wives, they'll get scared. So it's hard, but, you know, really kind of bringing your partner on board to what you're trying to create creates intimacy, creates closeness, and creates you not giving away half your money when you're 50 or 60 years old, because then you're with the person that you always loved.
Yeah, I like that story. It's really powerful. I'll share a quick one with you in case something like this is useful, or you want to steer one of your clients this direction. So some of the way that I've explored learning, I think I said earlier off air, a lot of times we learn the hard way. So one of those hard ways to learn, one of those ways to really show up in this metaphor for adversity is physically, right? So I've gone and done a few physical team-based crucibles where, you know, you're put through stuff that is extremely stressful physically, mentally, emotionally, and you got to figure it out as an individual, and you got to figure it out as a team. And there are times when you may step up or be called on to lead or to follow. And there are certainly times that you're going to have your strengths show up as an asset to the team. And there are times that you're going to be weak. You're going to need help, and you're going to have to ask for help, and you're going to have to get over being a burden on the team, right? Because that's just how it goes and how it works. And so it's a really interesting sort of metaphor for life to go do something like that, and then take those lessons back to the personal life and the business life. So I don't know if you've steered people that kind of direction, but if it ever shows up for one of your clients, or you think it's an idea they would like, I'd love to put you in touch with some of those.
100%. It takes experiential stuff like that. You're not going to, unless you're in the crucible, you're not going to know what on your nervous system, what that feels like. Unless you're carried across the finish line, you're not going to know what it's like, right, to allow your team to take care of things. So you're 100% right.
Right. Fantastic. Well, Mark, I really appreciate you taking time today. I didn't go through your whole resume, and we'll get it up with the show notes for this episode, but I know you have worked with some incredible companies. You've worked with some incredible leaders and corporations to the point where, you know, the dollar figure in terms of measuring the success that you've helped impart is amazing. So, you know, I appreciate you coming to tell your story and so modestly tell, you know, your story as a coach, but I appreciate the work you're doing out there in the world. It's something that so many leaders and so many men need. And I'm honored to share a bit of it here with the audience today.
Thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing. Your library is incredible. So I look forward to actually listening to a bunch of the other episodes.
Oh, thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you. So markjsilverman.com. I'll work with you to get some links up, and we'll get some tools in folks' hands, and then get people in touch with you if they'd like to on your upcoming leadership, leading up, leading across, leading within. I love that. And we'll go from there. Again, I appreciate your time. Thank you, Mark.
Great to meet you. Take care.
All right, guys. Thank you again to Mark Silverman. That was episode 117. You'll find the show notes, of course, at men2mastery.com/117. You know, Mark left us with a ton there in the episode. In the show notes, you'll find links to all of his social media, including LinkedIn, and a couple of those freebies I mentioned at the beginning, and I think we touched on in the episode. So Mark's been very generous to offer us some additional depth and insight, you can go find at those links in the show notes. So two things, right? I promised you an update here at the end of the episode. I want to introduce you, update you on community, a change that I've made there. And I want to update you on coaching, which is one of the other reasons I've spent some time away from this platform. So community, right? I've always wanted a place for the men, the listeners, this tribe, to be able to connect with a level of privacy and discretion so we can be open with each other in our successes, our wins, as well as our failures, our lessons, in motivating each other, in sharing with each other, in asking each other for advice, you know, questions that may come up, life circumstances that may come up. And so we do have, or had, I should say, a private Facebook group. We had a page and we had a private group. Now that meant the privacy thing, but if I'm honest, for me personally, Facebook has never sat right with me. It's just never resonated with me. And even more so over the last few years, as we've seen that become a lever, a platform for a political agenda, and in particular, censorship, which just, you know, can't sit right with any American who believes in the Constitution and the First Amendment in particular. The censorship thing, it's the last straw, right? And so if you do go to our page and our private group, it's still there, but it's effectively dead, and it will point you to a new place we can connect. So what I've done is create a broadcast channel as well as a private chat forum on an app, a mobile app for your phone called Telegram. So you can get it on iPhone, you can get it on Android, and it is just it's a quick, light way that we can stay in touch on a regular daily basis, right? And we can do all those things I just mentioned, as well as if we need to take things offline to a Zoom, to a phone call, to a group discussion, to a one-on-one discussion, we can do all that. But Telegram is hopefully a way we can all connect more frequently, more often, to the benefit of each of us and all of us. All right, so if you are on the Facebook page or group, please join us over on Telegram. Or if you're hearing about this for the first time and want to connect more deeply with me and this community of incredible men, please do that. All right, and here's how you find it. Either go to men2mastery.com/tribe, or you can go to our website and look for the main menu up at the top of the page that says tribe. Either one will take you there. Best done on your mobile device or a tablet, right? Because it is a mobile style app that Telegram offers. All right, that's the community update. Please do pop over there. I think a dozen or so have done so already. Love to see a lot more of you guys over there. Second thing, right? Coaching. So I stepped away from the podcast for a while, working on three things, really. One was automation around this process, in particular the post-production process. And this is a bit of a tangent, but I just want to share kind of wins and lessons always, right? And as a lesson, I've found some new automation tools. Great. On the other hand, I tried delegating. So I tried an executive assistant, and that was just tougher, right? It's especially with a remote, with a virtual type of a circumstance. I just found that teaching my process the way I wanted to do it was just very tough, and it was going to be a long learning curve. So, you know, if any of you have gone through a similar process, I'd love to hear more if it was successful. For now, I'm back at it and simply streamlining things with automation. So this is also related to the business development, the coaching update in terms of, so I was out developing some new consulting business. That's something I've been doing for 3+ decades. And it's primarily in the large corporate space, right? And so I am kicking off some new things there that are kind of the classic day job, if you will. But it's also been an opportunity for me to refocus on what my next season, my next stage, what my evolution is as a professional. And in reflection, I found two things. So one, really, what are the main things that I've brought to the table that I've found, that I've observed, that I think are key and common across so many organizations? And the second thing is, you know, where is my sort of passion and my superpower, my strength, if you will, and where I like to work with those organizations. And here's the thing on both of those is I love working with, I love accountability. And so it's really all about business owners and leaders. And in particular, it's not the massive multinational, it's really a growth phase business. That is the most exciting stage of an organization, of a business, of its arc to me. So as I kind of go into maybe the last years, however long I may be grateful for it to last, of my formal consulting career, what I'm really re-gearing to and pivoting here for the long run is working more directly, similar to Mark, in a coaching capacity for business owners and leaders of growth stage businesses. And in that reflection on where I've seen the most difference made across businesses, across my career, I came up with three super critical components that every business, and particularly a growth phase business, needs to have in place if they really want to optimize that business, optimize that growth, and probably most importantly, as leaders, as professionals, as individuals, make sure they're doing that in a way that still realizes the fulfillment, the happiness, the freedom, and of course, the financial benefit of doing all those things, of putting in the hours and putting in the hard work. Otherwise, what's the point, right? If we can't be fulfilled, if we can't be happy, if we can't really connect to our purpose and have the things in life that we really are here to enjoy, right? Relationships, family, experiences, all which come with that time and financial freedom, then we're not doing something the way we should be. We're not doing something optimally. And I would argue the way that we really intend to when we get into these leadership roles and ownership roles in the first place. So I updated you on where to find the latest tribe, mentomastery.com/tribe. As it comes to coaching and what I just mentioned, if any of that resonates with you, if it sounds like a position you're in, if you're interested, you have more questions about what I'm doing in that space, let's connect on that. And the best way to find that and do that is I've set up another website. You can go to mastery.coach, all right, mastery.coach, and that will take you to my coaching webpage. And right there up at the top of the front page, it's just a landing page, and you'll find more information about what I'm doing there, and you will find a button to book a free call, right? We can jump on a 90-minute call, dive deep on what may be going on, what I'm working on, what those critical components are, and what you may be running into. Let's have a crucial conversation. And again, if this resonates with you, I think it may be really beneficial. I'd love to connect with you there and in that way. So to wrap up, mentomastery.com/tribe, get over to our Telegram app and let's connect there as a community and move ourselves forward as a team. And then for you business owners and leaders, let's connect over at mastery.coach, set up a discovery call with me if I can be of service in those ways I just described. All right, guys, that wraps it up for this episode for 117. I will be back here very, very shortly with episode 118 with Brad Ritter. You're going to love this one, right? We talk about doing hard things on a consistent basis and how it shows up to benefit our tribe, our family, our community, our world, and our business. And Brad is the guy for that. So we'll see you next time on 118 with Brad Ritter.